Well, thank you, Steve, and I want to thank the Washington County Veterans Association. What an honor and a privilege it is to come back to my hometown after all of these years and be able to give this address today. Coming in this morning, I saw a lot of familiar faces, people that I've known over the years and that I've looked up to, and it's just an honor to do that. I want to also recognize a distinguished guest and thank you all for allowing me to share the podium with you today. I want to recognize some of my family that's here. The first is my mother, Joan Free. She herself is an Army wife and the mother of two soldiers. Mom. Then I want to recognize my wife, Susan, fellow soldier. She herself has 22 years of military service. And currently, she is on her probably most difficult and yet rewarding assignment. And that assignment comes with the rank of granny. So she's keeping all the grandkids rounded up this morning. I want to recognize my son, Jerry. He is he chose to go to the United States Marine Corps right out of high school. He served his time and did two tours as a combat infantryman in Iraq inside the Sunni Triangle. Jerry. Our family has a long history of providing citizen soldiers to our country. I had uncles that served in World War I and World War II. My father, my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, and a sister-in-law all had careers in the United States military. And we currently have two nieces and two nephews that are serving. So I am proud of our family and what our family has. This country means so much to us, and I'm proud of what our family has been able to, that we've done our part to support that country. I want to give just a minute a tip of the hat to where I call home. Even though I don't live here anymore, it's still considered Brenham and Washington County my home. My ancestors came here to Brenham. Both sides of my family showed up here in Washington County in the mid-1800s. And they've been here ever since. And I want to talk about, just for a second, what Brenham and Washington County was back then. We were what everybody wants to be now. We were. The cotton was grown in these local fields. It was ginned here locally. We had a cotton mill here in town that took that cotton and made it into textile and then shipped it off. The reason Bluebell Creameries is where it is because this was a huge dairy county at one time. Even in the 70s, Washington County had 150-something dairy farms in it. Everybody would like to go back to that now, and I just think about it. And I've talked to several of my classmates and people over the years that it was like we were living in a Norman Rockwell painting. If you think about that, that's how I feel about Washington County. Well, I want to, in my military training, they always tell you that the best way to have a good speech is to have a good beginning and a good end and keep them real close together. So that's what I'm going to attempt to do. I'm going to tell you about why soldiers serve, why soldiers fight, and then what that sacrifice means to us today. I'm going to tell you a military vignette, and we'll wrap up with that. Soldiers of the United States are unique around the world, and I use the term soldier as the father of a Marine as a generic term for warrior. I include sailors, Marines, airmen, and Coast Guardsmen in that definition. We do not send the conscripted dregs of our society to do our bidding. We ask for volunteers, and we send the best and brightest of who we are. United States soldiers do not swear an allegiance to a king or a queen or a political party or a dictator or any one person. Soldiers swear allegiance to the Constitution of the United States. And that oath of office goes like this. I, Arthur J. Free, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me, according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. That's what we as soldiers swear to promise to protect. The ideals outlined in the Constitution have been called the Great Experiment in Democracy. For 246 years, those ideals have stood as a beacon for the world. The ideals that we hold so dear can best be summarized in the preamble to that Constitution. Generations of school children have been required to memorize and recite the preamble. And I don't know if they still do that today, but we should be contacting our local school board and making sure that they do know what that preamble says. And that preamble says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. As we strive to become a more perfect union, we must recognize that some members of our society have been denied the fullness of the ideals it sets forth. We are a work in progress and must continue to work toward the perfection that our forefathers intended. I would have gladly spent my whole life farming right here in Washington County, just like my grandfathers did. I would have burned myself up farming right here. But my God has led me on a path that has traversed the globe. I have seen many of the world's glimmering cities, but I have also seen squalid outposts of desperation and despair. I fully understand why people from around the world want to come here to partake in the opportunities that we offer. My ancestors were immigrants. And among those who risk all for the life of opportunity in the United States, soldiers are servants at heart, and soldiers serve to uphold those best ideals of our society. While soldiers serve for those grand ideals outlined in our Constitution, soldiers fight on the battlefield for a much different reason. I have heard the bullets fired in anger whiz past. I have felt the concussion from incoming rocket and mortar fire. I have seen the warriors battered and bloodied, carried off of the field. I have stood in the formation where a rifle and a helmet represented our buddies that were with us only yesterday, but they're gone forever today. Our engineer unit lost 8 soldiers while we were in Iraq. When you find yourself in that position, the high ideals of service are overcome by the sense of duty and instinctual survival. When the battle is joined and you look around, there are no marching bands. There are no rousing speeches. There are no cheering crowds. The only thing that you can depend on is the soldier next to you. It matters not what the race, religion, or the gender of that soldier is. Soldiers have to rely on each other. I have served with soldiers of every description under some very trying circumstances, and I have found nothing but courage and loyalty and devotion to duty. I was privileged to be there with them. William Shakespeare most famously captured this sentiment in the St. Crispin's Day speech from the play Henry V. From this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Soldiers fight for each other, plain and simple. They develop bonds of kinship that endure a lifetime. It is indeed a small fraternity. During World War II and the Greatest Generation, only 13% of our population served in the U.S. military. Today, that is less than 3%. And I want to mention the 1%. When I say the 1% today, most of us think of the 1% that have 90% of the wealth. There's another 1%, and that's a 1% of the population that are Gold Star family members. Think about that. If you take the inverse of that, that means 99% of the population of the United States does not know how cheaply we accept our citizenship. They have never placed a family member on the altar of freedom. And that's what we're here to remember today. Many in our society say that they loathe soldiers, that they view soldiers as bloodthirsty killers, always spoiling for a fight. I can tell you from personal experience, and I say this sincerely, no one prays for peace harder than a soldier, because they know the sacrifice that will be asked on the battlefield. I want to share a military vignette with you this morning from our nation's history of what could be arguably, the one group of soldiers and their commander who saved the United States. I tell you this story in order to tell you what their commander said 50 years later, and to connect that event to our national heritage. Slavery was a festering boil on our society that denied people the ideals that are guaranteed in the Constitution. As with a boil on the body, the boil of slavery had to be lanced to bring about healing. Lancing a boil is quite often an unpleasant and painful experience. The instrument that lanced the boil of slavery was the Civil War. The Civil War was painful, unpleasant, and as with any lanced boil, the healing has been slow and painful, and it's left an ugly scar on our society. On July the 1st, 1863, the Confederacy's Army of Northern Virginia was on the march. Their objective was to take the war to the north and capture Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. The Union's Army of the Potomac was conducting reconnaissance operations. They were attempting to find them, to match their movements, and to block their progress. Scouts from both armies accidentally ran into each other in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, in what is known in military terms as a meeting engagement. Skirmishes raged throughout the day as both armies rushed to Gettysburg. As evening fell, at the far left end of the Union line was the 20th Maine Infantry Regiment. The 20th was the last Union regiment to arrive. They had been shuffled down the Union line to the left, and they found themselves defending across a topographical feature known as Little Round Top. Their orders were to hold that position at all cost. The 20th Maine was commanded by Colonel Joshua Chamberlain. Chamberlain was a farm boy from Brewer, Maine. He had attended Bowdoin College. He had become a school teacher and a pastor. Neither of these occupations is generally considered a manly profession. But Joshua Chamberlain was a man's man. He had led the regiment in 20 engagements throughout the war. He had several horses shot out from under him. He was wounded 6 times. He was plagued throughout the remainder of his life with issues from his wounds. He ultimately succumbed at the age of 86 years old, and he is considered to be the last Civil War veteran to have died as the result of his wounds. As July the 2nd dawned, Confederate forces probed for the Union line. They assaulted up Little Round Top several times. Chamberlain and the 20th Maine had repelled the repeated assaults. Chamberlain took account of his situation in the early afternoon, and he found that he had lost half of his men. The regiment was all but out of ammunition. Chamberlain could have chosen honorable survival and withdrawn from the field. He could have said, "We held as long as we can, and with no reinforcement or resupply, we had to withdraw." No one would have faulted him. Instead of honorable survival, Chamberlain chose heroic action. He could see the enemy mustering at the bottom of the hill for another assault. He ordered his remaining men to fix bayonets. He chose a time-honored military tactic. When your back is against the wall and you are out of options, attack. As the enemy advance progressed up the slope near the top, Chamberlain jumped up, drew his saber, and yelled charge. His men followed, and the regiment charged down the hill. Their bold action shocked the Confederate force, and they quickly retreated or surrendered. The Confederates were astonished when they found themselves captured by less than half of their number. The day ended with the 20th Maine still firmly in control of Little Round Top. If Chamberlain and his men had not held, the Confederate Army most certainly would have rolled up the flank and been behind the Union line. Most historians agree that the Army of Potomac would have been defeated and the Army of Northern Virginia would have marched on Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. The historians also agree that the Union, if that had happened, the Union would have collapsed. And in all likelihood, we would not be in the United States today. There would be no United States stretching from sea to shining sea. The next day, July the 3rd, saw Pickett's charge and the so-called high water mark of the Confederacy. The Army of Virginia withdrew from the field and marched southward. For all intents and purposes, the Civil War was over at that point, although many more men would die before the end at Appomattox. We gather today to pay tribute to our countrymen from all conflicts who have stood against the odds. We honor those who have given the ultimate sacrifice for liberty. We honor their families, who were never the same without their presence. Our society is diminished without their contribution. We remember they died to preserve the ideal set forth in our Constitution. It is our duty to remember them and to pass along their memory to the future. I close with a quote from Colonel Joshua Chamberlain on the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg, a few months before his death. I think this sentiment must be internalized by each of us, and it should be endued to future generations of America. We must remember our past. We must learn from our history. We must not allow history to be erased, no matter how unpleasant. Winston Churchill said, "Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." We cannot change the past, We can only change the future. From Joshua Chamberlain, July the 2nd, 1913, the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. The power of noble deeds is to be preserved and passed on to the future. In great deeds, something abides. On great fields, something stays. Forms change and pass. Bodies disappear, but spirits linger. To consecrate ground for the vision place of souls. And reverent men and women, generations that know us not, and that we know not of, heart drawn to see where and by whom great things were suffered and done for them, shall come to this deathless field to ponder and to dream. And lo, the shadow of a mighty presence shall wrap them in its bosom, and the power of the vision shall be passed into their souls. Ladies and gentlemen, that mighty presence is with us today. The spirits of all of our countrymen, they are swirling around us every day. The power of the vision has been passed to us. We are free to ponder and dream. We must ensure that the vision of liberty and justice for all is passed to future generations. Our servicemen and women have borne true faith and allegiance to those ideals, just as they promised. Some have shown their love for our way of life. As my Lord and Savior said, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. As we strive today to form a more perfect union, we must never forget, never forget, never forget that the gift of freedom that we enjoy today has been paid for in full by the blood of our countrymen. Thank you, and God bless America.